This week on Viewpoints.
This is an invisible population nationwide. It's a swelling population. This is America.
Soaring housing prices are driving more and more people into homelessness. Then,
control is an illusion. Companies offer some choices, but they don't offer choices like stop surveilling you.
The digital privacy conundrum. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
I struggled with symptoms like frequent gas and stomach pain for years.
I was bloated all the time with daily diarrhea.
At first, I thought it was what I was eating.
I kept thinking it was stomach issues.
So I did my research and talked to my doctor, and we finally uncovered the truth.
It was actually EPI. Exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI, is a condition where your pancreas is unable to help break down your food.
It can lead to symptoms like diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, unexplained weight loss, and oily stools.
And EPI symptoms can be confused with those of other common digestive conditions, like irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's, and celiac disease.
So getting to the right diagnosis meant being more open with my doctor about the severity of my symptoms and how often they were happening.
But there's good news. EPI is manageable, so don't wait any longer. Use the symptom checker at identifyepi.com and schedule a visit or call with your doctor to ask,
Could I have EPI? Sponsored by AbbVie.
Between January and October of this year, the national median rent jumped by 16%. Across the country, housing prices have soared during the pandemic and continue to tick upwards. Demand has driven up costs, worsening an already dire housing crisis. The result? Millions of middle and lower income citizens who can't find affordable housing and are left with few options. These people are working, but still can't get by. Take California, for instance. If you make $14 an hour, you would have to work 89 hours per week in order to afford a one-bedroom apartment at the going rate. One to two-bedroom? You need to earn $39 per hour to afford the rental, according to data from the National Low-Income Housing Coalition.
Housing prices are at their highest levels. A lot of us thought that with COVID, there would be actually a downturn in the housing market. But in fact, the opposite has happened. And the reality is, if you cannot find a place to live, whether it's not even to buy a home, but even to rent, you're going to end up living in your car. You're going to end up couch surfing, living with family for as long as you can, but ultimately falling into homelessness. And that's really what we're seeing more of, is that economically induced homelessness.
That's Jamie Ross, the CEO of the Florida Housing Coalition, a nonprofit aiming to improve the affordability and availability of housing in Florida. She says that the state has seen a drastic increase in rental and home prices due to an influx of new residents. Just in the last year, home prices have jumped by 22%.
There are so many folks in the United States, and folks even coming from outside the United States, who have plenty of money. So they're able to pay high prices for housing. Well, the market is going to provide high-priced housing for people who are willing to pay high prices. So the prices get set by whatever the market will bear. And that isn't the workforce in Florida. They can't afford those prices.
This rise in demand has forced many longtime Floridians to move out of paradise. Many of these residents are part of the 1.6 million people working in the Florida tourism industry. A majority of these workers earn minimum wage, which is $10 an hour, or are paid slightly more. In Orlando, Disney World employees make $15 an hour, but even this isn't enough.
If you actually look at the prices for a studio apartment in Osceola County, you would need a $19 wage at the very least to afford a studio apartment. So $15 is, you know, it's a big hike at Disney World and at other places of employment, but it's still not going to close the housing gap that we have currently.
That's Andrew Ross, a professor of social and cultural analysis at New York University and the author of Sunbelt Blues, The Failure of American Housing. His new book focuses on Osceola County in Central Florida, which is one of the worst places for affordable housing in the country and home to Disney World. He says that in the county and across the U.S., it's not about a housing supply shortage, but a lack of places that middle and lower class people can actually afford.
We have more than 350,000 vacant apartments in New York City right now, according to a recent study. So it's not the more spectacular luxury condos in the sky that have been under scrutiny of late. It's a much greater slice of the housing stock. And in Osceola County, there's an equivalent of that. There's a lot of luxury vacation homes in the western end of the county. Brands itself as the vacation home capital of the world. Very luxurious properties, you know, that rent for $3,000 a night. And on any given night, most of the rooms in these places are empty while people are sleeping underneath the trees in the woods just off Route 192.
Andrew Ross spent many months living amongst lower-income residents in Osceola County. As prices rose, he witnessed people forced out of their homes and into monthly motel rooms.
It's a very cramped space. If you want to cook, it's a hot plate, portable hot plate you're cooking on. And yes, some of the households are pretty large.
As time went by, some of these occupants could no longer afford the rising monthly motel rate and moved even further out, into the woods.
This is an invisible population nationwide. It's a swelling population, not just in warm weather locations, also in cold weather locations. And they're out of sight, so they're quite literally invisible unless you know where to look for them. But outside of most small towns or just a little off commercial strips in suburban areas, you find people living in the woods. This is America, 2021.
While thousands live in tents and sleeping bags, countless apartments priced out of reach stay vacant. The pandemic, in many ways, has only exacerbated this crisis as corporations buy up properties and flip once affordable houses into luxury properties.
In the second quarter of this year, one in every six houses that was purchased in the U.S. was snapped up by a corporate investor, and in some regions, one out of every four. And in addition, what we're seeing right now is private equities snapping up a lot of small landlord holdings that haven't been able to survive during the pandemic. And they're also active in other building classes, trailer parks, student housing, even master planned communities.
So, what are some possible solutions? How can local governments increase affordable housing? Jamie Ross points to community land trusts as one vital resource. These trusts are organizations that permanently own the land and enter into a long-term affordable renewable lease with homeowners. Usually, the lease is 99 years and comes with a fixed 30-year mortgage, so there aren't any surprise price increases.
Community land trust homeownership is an alternative to renting. It's not an alternative to buying a home. If you can afford to buy a home, fee simple, great. But if you can't, if all you can afford is renting, getting into a community land trust home really may be a possibility for you to work your way into the home ownership market, because the land is taken out of the purchase price because you're not buying the land. And, you know, a mission-based nonprofit is owning the land and creating an affordable home that remains affordable because there's a 99-year ground lease and a resale restriction.
Jamie Ross says that these agreements allow people to find affordable housing, save their money, and can also get some money back if they choose to move out.
In a CLT scenario, when you sell your house, you may get 25% of the increase in the value.
Once a person or family leaves, another seeking affordable housing moves in. It's a permanent fixed resource since the community trust forever owns the land. One other solution is changing zoning laws so land can be more efficiently used.
Changing your land use so that you, as a local government, allow accessory dwelling units, or what people sometimes call granny flats, to allow them in all single-family zoned areas. That is a wonderful smart growth tool where you have a main house and it has a smaller unit that is a rental unit that can provide workforce housing in an already built environment.
With prices for food, gas, and other basics rising across the country, thousands more in the near future will no longer be able to afford their rent or mortgage. There are several solutions to fixing this housing crisis. The important part is that the work is happening to help Americans in need. To find out more about this topic, links to housing resources and our guests, Professor Andrew Ross and Jamie Ross, visit viewpointsradio.org. This segment was written and produced by Amira Zaveri. I'm Gary Price.
Coming up, the cost of being online when Viewpoints returns.
Who brought the sauce?
I brought the sauce.
Who made the sauce?
I made the sauce.
What's in the sauce?
I am the sauce.
Who brought the sauce?
Spilled the sauce? Quick, the quicker picker-upper. Bounty picks up spills and messes quicker. And each sheet is 2 times more absorbent, so you can use less than the leading ordinary brand.
Who brought the sauce?
I brought the sauce.
Who made the sauce?
I made the sauce.
What's in the sauce?
I am the sauce.
Who brought the sauce? Okay.
Bounty, the quicker picker-upper.
My stomach.
Don't worry, I've got you covered.
When you have nausea, heartburn, indigestion, upset stomach, diarrhea.
What's that?
It's Pepto-Bismol Chews.
Pepto-Bismol's in a chew?
Yeah, they taste great and provide fast relief. And you can always have Pepto-Bismol handy.
Ooh, let me try it.
Try Pepto-Bismol Chews for fast relief.
Nausea, heartburn, indigestion, upset stomach, diarrhea.
Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
I struggled with symptoms like frequent gas and stomach pain for years.
I was bloated all the time with daily diarrhea.
At first, I thought it was what I was eating.
I kept thinking it was stomach issues.
So I did my research and talked to my doctor, and we finally uncovered the truth.
It was actually EPI. Exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI, is a condition where your pancreas is unable to help break down your food.
It can lead to symptoms like diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, unexplained weight loss, and oily stools.
And EPI symptoms can be confused with those of other common digestive conditions, like irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's, and celiac disease.
So getting to the right diagnosis meant being more open with my doctor about the severity of my symptoms and how often they were happening.
But there's good news. EPI is manageable, so don't wait any longer. Use the symptom checker at identifyepi.com and schedule a visit or call with your doctor to ask,
Could I have EPI? Sponsored by AbbVie.
Every time you comment on a thread or update your social media, are you aware that your movements are being carefully tracked? Even outside of social media, when browsing a website, searching on Google, or getting directions, do you ever stop to think about where all of this data is going? Most likely, you don't give it a second thought. These days, so many things in life require us to be online, whether it's for work, to unwind, or to order delivery. During the pandemic especially, internet usage skyrocketed. The average American spent 82 minutes per day on social media alone in 2020, according to the research firm eMarketer. With so much time spent in front of a screen and our activity cataloged, is there any semblance of digital privacy anymore?
We not only lack control, but there is no limit on how information about us gets collected and used, and rarely used to our benefit, used to manipulate, control, and exploit us by companies, by governments, by other people.
That's Neil Richards, the Koch Distinguished Professor in Law at Washington University in St. Louis School of Law, and the director of the Cordell Institute. He's a leading expert in privacy and information law, and is also the author of the new book, Why Privacy Matters.
People are finally starting to realize that underneath the shiny promises of apps and digital devices, there are really fundamental power questions about how our society functions, about who the winners and losers in a digital economy are. And I think ordinary people are increasingly the losers.
In today's digital era, access to personal information and how people spend their time online is invaluable.
Anything from side hobbies to shopping history or relationship status is fair game. For instance, when downloading an app or creating an account for a website, you usually have to accept their privacy statement. But who's really going to read through endless pages of small text before clicking accept?
There is this bargain, this deal that we seem to have reached with a lot of technology companies, in that we're asked, we're forced to give up some degree of privacy to allow access to our reading habits, our sexual preferences, our location, in exchange for these wonderful services. The problem is, though some people have described it as a grand bargain, I don't remember, and I've been working on these issues for almost 30 years now, I don't remember ever agreeing to that grand bargain. It's one that's been imposed upon us piece by piece, nudge by nudge over time.
It's important to understand that this curated data is powerful. In large quantities, it equates to large profits for companies.
It's interesting because any single piece of information about you, about me, about anybody who's listening to us talk today, often has a fairly insignificant value. But when you put all that together, when you add up the value of all of those microtransactions, you come up with a value in the maybe the trillions of dollars. And that's not fantastical. Think about how Google and Facebook have made their money. A targeted ad to an individual consumer worth a fraction of a dollar or a fraction of a cent, multiplied billions and trillions of times. It's that kind of aggregation that has made these enormous technology fortunes of these big data companies, of these surveillance capitalist companies.
Some people might just ask, but why not opt out of this data retrieval? Richard says it's possible to an extent to toggle your privacy settings and opt out of some data collection, but complete control is impossible.
When we talk about individuals protecting themselves too, we often talk about privacy in terms of control, that if you just went into our privacy interface, if you adjusted your privacy settings, you would protect yourself. And that's just nonsense. Control is the way that we often talk about empowering consumers in the privacy context. But control is overwhelming. We can't even remember all of our passwords. How are we expected to remember all of the privacy settings of all of the different accounts that we have? Control is an illusion. Companies offer some choices, but they don't offer choices like stop surveilling me or stop aggregating a profile of everything I read on the internet to sell me more effectively an ad for jeans or for a new car or a certain kind of perfume.
Through his work, Richards often hears from people that this kind of tracking is creepy. However, he argues that this shouldn't be the main focus. He says more Americans should be asking, why is this information able to be used so freely in our society? More alarmingly, people need to be aware that it's not just used for advertising, but also to sway people's opinions and actions.
When Facebook contracted with Cambridge Analytica to serve ads and to share information with it, Cambridge Analytica used that information to create detailed psychographic profiles of approximately 100 million American voters by their real name and serve ads to them that were designed to manipulate their personality types in order to get them to vote a certain way. It happened in the US in the 2016 presidential election, and it happened in my home country of Britain during the Brexit referendum. We weren't aware of that. We didn't trigger that creepy reaction, but the under-inclusiveness of creepiness as a test for privacy shows there are lots of information problems that we don't think are creepy because we don't know they exist.
In the end, Facebook's Cambridge Analytica scandal resulted in a $5 billion fine handed out by the Federal Trade Commission for privacy violations. While this is an extraordinary amount of money for most, for a large tech company, it's a small slap on the wrist. You might be wondering at this point, how is the U.S. government protecting people that are online? Why are more companies not being held accountable? Richards says that in our country, there are no baseline privacy protections for citizens.
The United States is the only advanced democracy. In fact, the United States is the only advanced economy in the entire world that doesn't have baseline protective privacy legislation. So right now in the United States, companies can basically do what they want with human information, as long as first, they don't lie about it. Second, they don't cause massive individual harm. And third, they follow some notion of what privacy lawyers call notice and choice. So this is the fiction that you've read the privacy policy, that you know what it says, that you've agreed to it, and you've chosen to use the service.
These are very broad agreements compared to other countries around the world. Take Europe, for instance, where there are much stronger protections for consumers. Richards says there, every use of human information has to be justified and accurate. There also needs to be direct and explicit consent before it's used. On top of this, there are specific privacy agencies that handle investigations surrounding data breaches and the unlawful use of data.
They work to investigate privacy injuries to ensure that the Europeans call privacy data protection, that data is protected and that it's used in ethical ways. In the United States, we have the Federal Trade Commission, which is an agency that was created in 1914 to deal with industrial age problems, which has done great work, but it is under-resourced, it is understaffed, and it lacks the necessary legal tools to do the kind of work that the European agencies have been able to do. And as a result, Americans are far less protected than Europeans. They are far more able to be exploited and manipulated and to have their privacy violated and used in ways that benefit the power of large corporations rather than their own human interests.
Putting our lives online and using technology to get by is the reality of living in today's world. Just like any other protection provided by the government, Americans deserve to be protected online as well. To find out more about this topic and our guest, Professor Neil Richards, visit viewpointsradio.org. You can also find his book, Why Privacy Matters, online or request it through your local bookstore. This segment was written and produced by Amira Zaveri, studio production by Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
With just one spray of Microban 24, your hard surfaces are sanitized for up to 24 hours. Touch after touch after touch.
So 6 hours from now?
Still sanitized.
12 hours?
Yep.
18 hours.
We're really doing this.
24 hours.
When used as directed, one spray of Microban keeps killing 99.9% of bacteria touch after touch for, yeah, up to 24 hours.
Wow.
Microban 24, the sanitizer 4 out of 5 doctors would use in their own homes. So why aren't you?
It's not just Santa who's coming to town. It's also your in-laws and their cousins. So time for some gifts from the Home Depot. From doorbell cameras to intelligent thermostats, you'll look smart and save big on the latest smart home gifts. Does your father-in-law like to fix things around the house? Put him to work with a DeWalt 20-volt 2-battery starter kit. Buy one, get one free. That should keep him busy. No matter who comes to town this year, make the holidays yours with savings on tools and gifts store-wide from the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to Culture Crash, where we examine what's new and old in entertainment. I'm not a huge royal family head. I've never watched The Crown. I don't know who's who in the periphery of the royal family. It's just not really my thing. I did, however, go see Spencer, the new movie where Kristen Stewart plays Princess Diana. Mostly because of the movie's Oscar buzz, but also partially because I am a little fascinated by the life of Princess Di. First things first, Kristen Stewart is incredible. I watched some clips of the real Diana before heading to the theater, and at times the likeness and the mannerisms in Stewart's portrayal are uncanny. Beyond just sounding and looking like her, though, Stewart is incredibly naturalistic and gives a very powerful performance. All of her raves are well earned. The movie traces one weekend in her life, a Christmas weekend right as her marriage to Prince Charles was falling apart. It admits right at the top that the movie is a, quote, fable based on a true tragedy, so I know it's not exactly a documentary, but well, it feels true, as far as these kind of fictionalizations go. In the movie, Diana doesn't really want to spend her Christmas with a bunch of people watching her every move, and yet she feels trapped. What surprised me is that, in addition to marveling at Stewart, I also really liked the film itself. It was slow-moving at times, and it can be a little indulgent with its pacing. However, I think director Pablo Larraín uses his camera so smartly. We as the audience are with Diana the whole way, sometimes literally step for step. There are multiple scenes where the camera traces her every movement, but always from a distance. We move with her forward and backward, but there's always a full, drafty room or a row of plants or pavement between Diana and the camera. And this effect really worked on me. It invited the audience in. It allowed us to experience what she experienced, but it also respects the distance. The fact is that we can't know what exactly was happening in her head or what exactly she was feeling. What becomes apparent is that she feels stuck. She wants to live a freer life. She wants to spend more time with her children and less time with her estranged husband's family. And that experience and journey is lonely, anxious, and at times terrifying. Spencer is a movie that takes its time, but one that I found to be wholly worthwhile. Spencer is now playing in theaters. I'm Evan Rook.
That's a no-whip, high-foam, 170-degree, sugar-free gingerbread latte.
Ah, yes. It's gingerbread latte season at Duchesne's Coffee Shop. He'll need a seasonal barista before his cookie starts to crumble.
Anything else? Oh, there's a list.
Indeed can help him hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Instant Match instantly connects you with quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your sponsored job description. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
Whether you're vaccinated or not, it's important to know the symptoms of COVID and its variants. Fever is the leading sign, and only the Exergen temporal scanner thermometer has been proven accurate with more than 100 clinical studies. Non-contact thermometers have no clinical evidence behind them and cannot be relied on. Be vigilant and seek medical advice at the first sign of fever. Be accurate with Exergen. Learn more at Exergen.com. That's Exergen.com.
And that's Viewpoints for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows and find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints.